Get that run so I don't forget. Cadence, Chris, Eli, there's Gage, there's Gage. Smack dab in the middle. Class is this? Oh, U.S. government. Elections. At the primaries. There we go. Close. Slideshow. Current slide. Lady and gentlemen, so papers are in. Thank you.
I saw all four of yours made it in. That's a good thing. I think as of right now, there's only one student who didn't, but I only looked yesterday afternoon, so I don't know if he submitted it late. Yes.
I think it's something weird with Blackboard, but I get it with other classes too. It'll say like.
Your paper was in.
Yeah.
It's just because I left it open as a window for late submissions.
Okay.
So I think it's going to close. I think I gave up to like 5 days late with that late submission penalty. So. Have you been getting them daily or?
No, it was just one.
Just one. Yeah. No, your paper was there.
Good.
I'm grading this week. I got to grade your exams too. So that will be tackled. All right, so we were talking about elections. And we got to finish up elections today. Because then we got to talk about political parties and interest groups and hopefully do a little blurb on the bureaucracy. Any questions about what we covered with elections last class? Seeing. All right. Well, we have, in terms of governmental elections, multiple official elections. And at the federal level, the most frequent elections are congressional elections. And of course, why do I have it pluralized? Well, just to emphasize that with congressional elections, you have not only the general, but of course, you also have primaries. So in an election, there are multiple elections. We got to remember that. Now, every 2 years, the entire House of Representatives is elected. Because if you recall, when we talked about Congress, Congress has 2-year terms. So it makes sense that the entire body gets flipped. Now, just FYI side note, while I find Allison's name on my list, there she is. The intention of only having the House of Representatives being 2-year terms was intentional by the framers because they wanted frequent turnover. They did not want the situation that we have now where people like Congressman McGovern, who's the congressman for the 2nd Massachusetts Congressional District, he's been in office since 1994, I think, or Nancy Pelosi, who has been in Congress since the 80s. You know, the idea of the Founding Fathers was that there would be men of quality, not trying to be disparaging, but just remember back then only men could run for office, but they basically wanted people of quality who were successful in their private lives and that would go and serve for a term or two, then retire and go back to their communities. They never envisioned these lifelong candidates. But unfortunately, in the modern era, that's what we have. Every 2 years, We also elect 1/3 of the Senate. This also was done by design, because when the framers created the Senate, they viewed that as the elderly body, the most experienced body, kind of like the ancient Roman Senate. Well, they didn't want to see the entire Senate of these learned experts, the elders, to be flipped over every 2 years. So they gave them 6-year terms. But in order to avoid the whole body flipping every 6 years, they divided it into thirds. So, Massachusetts, our last election in 2024, I think it was Ed Markey that was up for re-election, or was it Warren? I don't remember. Whoever won it was, one of our two senators was up. Then in 2026, I don't think either of them up. I think it's an off year until 2028. So that's what happens on the state level, because you have two people serving 6 year terms that are spread out. So four of that 6 year window, one of the two is up for election, but there is 1 2-year election when nobody is up for re-election. That's spread out across the country. Now every 4 years, the focus, of course, is the presidential election. Obviously, when it coincides with presidential elections, what's going on in the presidential election is hugely influential on the presidential campaign. So, for example, you probably don't remember this, but back in 2012, when Obama ran for re-election, his electoral win helped Elizabeth Warren beat, I'm working on 3 hours sleep, I can't remember his name. We actually had a Republican senator. We had a Republican senator, but because Obama was running and the Democrats came out en masse, Obama's campaign helped lift Warren into office. Scott Brown. Scott Brown. Now, FYI, in terms of label, the 2 years that are in between the presidential election are commonly referred to as midterm elections. Midterm elections. While the presidential election year influences the congressional elections, what the midterm elections typically are referendums on the president. If the president is doing well in the eyes of the people will go out and support the president's party. But if the president is not doing well in the eyes of the people, they will go and reject the president's party and potentially flip Congress over to the other side. Questions? Go back to that. I thought there was one more question. Questions? All right. Now, FYI, if you look at the history of the United States, going all the way back to the first congressional elections, most congressional elections are the same. Meaning, when the people go and vote, what they tend to do when they vote for members of Congress is they focus on their local politics. Former Massachusetts member of Congress who would rise to the rank of Speaker of the House when Ronald Reagan was president, a man by the name of Tip O'Neill. Maybe you've heard of the Tip O'Neill Tunnel. It was named after him. Tip once famously said, all politics are local. So when people go into the voting booth, yeah, maybe sometimes they're thinking about some national issue, but typically they're thinking about what's going on in their own backyard. And if they know something about the candidate and they think they're personable, that's the person who they'll vote for. So what I'm saying is, in most congressional elections throughout the history of the country, it was just that. It wasn't necessarily ideological or necessarily solely political. But in recent years, we've seen this. The power of the incumbency. Unlike the president, members of Congress are not term limited. So they can keep going back and keep going back and keep going back. And again, you look at the Pelosi's, the Mitch McConnell's, the Steny Hoyer's. A good chunk of the members of Congress are in their 70s or 80s, and they've been there for decades. And why is that? Name recognition. They're a household name because they've been in office so long. And because they're there, they can manipulate the levers of government. They can bring home the bacon to their home districts or their states. Case in point. Ted Kennedy, the younger brother of former President John F. Kennedy, was in Congress since, entered Congress, I think it was like 64 or something like that. I don't remember his first year when he was in there. But he was in Congress, the Senate, pretty much all the way up until he died in, when did Brown run? I think 2010 or 2011. So he was in the Senate for just about 50 years. He served on all the major committees. He knew all the players that were in Congress and in D.C. And it's because of Kennedy that we ended up with the big dig. To put the central artery. It used to be a highway that went right through the middle of Boston, like 290. And they basically took that and built those tubes underground. We would have never been able to pay for that as a state. But Kennedy used his position in the Senate to get funding for that. And as a result, the people rewarded him, particularly the unions. Because the Big Dig project lasted almost 25 years for its completion. Which meant literally there were some guys that their first job was beginning on the Big Dig and they could have retired from it. Well, if you have a member of Senate that's there for so long and they can get that kind of funding, you know, people are, again, they're not going to think necessarily the D or the R. They're going to think, well, let's keep bringing that bacon home. Excuse me, make sense? All right. Now, by the way, a little history in here. From 1955 all the way up until 1992, that's what you saw. Let's elect somebody that's bringing the pork home, and if you happen to live in a Republican district, well, chances are you're going to have a Republican, or if you have to, you live in a Democrat district, you're probably going to live in a Democrat, elect a Democrat. But there was no partisanship necessarily in the congressional campaigns. But things changed, and I remember when this changed. This is when national politics became more ideologically driven. In 1994, the Republican Party managed to do something that they had not done since 1952. Yeah, that would have been the right year. That would have been the election year. They managed to take back both chambers of Congress. Now, FYI, from 55 to 92, the Democrats had the majority in both chambers, except for a few years when the Republicans had a slight majority when Reagan was president. But in 1994, the Republicans launched a literal crusade against President Bill Clinton. Why? Clinton was hugely unpopular. Because when Clinton got into office, he pushed two issues that caused blue-collared, red-blooded Americans to rise up and essentially resist. His wife, Hillary Clinton, pushed an attempt to implement universal health care. Kind of like Obamacare, where the government basically determines what's in insurance. Well, I hate to break it to you, that's called socialism. So the American people are like, no, we're fighting the commies, why are we going to have a communist health care system? And that got people to the polls. Particularly when all of the major associations of doctors and hospitals came out and criticized what would happen to our care. Which ironically was proven true when they implemented Obamacare. Costs went through the roof. Doctors retired. Because they didn't want to be paper pushers. But it was defeated when Clinton was president. And the other thing was that Clinton managed to ram through the assault weapons ban, which was an infringement upon people's Second Amendment rights. So the Republicans hammered those two themes in every single congressional election across the country, and huge swing. 54 seats in the House, 14 seats in the Senate. The Republicans would manage to control both chambers all the way up into 2006. But it also rippled down to the state level. In 1994, the Republicans also gained 12 gubernatorial seats and took over 20 state legislatures from the Democrats. Well, guess what? Politics is like a pendulum. The Republican Revolution was created by how angry people were at Bill Clinton. Well, then guess what happened in 2006? The exact opposite. The pendulum swung in the other way. George Bush, hugely unpopular. Not only because of his response to Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, but also the fact that he got us embroiled in a war in Iraq after claiming that there were weapons of mass destruction and that Saddam Hussein was somehow tied to 9/11. And all of that was slowly being disproven. So the Democrats jumped on that. And in 2026, the pendulum went the other way. 31 seats swing in the House, 6-seat swing in the Senate meant for the last 2 years of George Bush's second term, he had to deal with a Democrat-controlled Congress. And at the state level, Democrats would regain a majority of the gubernatorial offices. Now here's the funny thing. I was teaching U.S. government back then. And every single book said, after 2006, those would be the exceptions. That everything after 2006 would go back to normal. In other words, the Democrats would probably have a slight majority, and they would maintain that for the next decade, two or three. But lo and behold, ideological politics, once again, got into congressional elections. 2010. When Obama was elected in 2008, he was pushing for Obamacare. But because the Democrats were in office, controlled Congress, they manipulated the legislative process to slip it through. They changed all the rules. I remember when Nancy Pelosi, who was then Speaker of the House, she famously went on TV when the reporters were asking, Madam Speaker, you have this huge health care bill, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages long. Can you explain the terms, what's in it? And she said, oh no, we're going to have to pass it so that way we can read it so we'll know what's in it. Now, FYI, one little side note, because I am a procedural geek. That violated, remember how we did how a bill becomes a law? How a congressional person is supposed to submit it, and if anything deal with money, supposed to start in the House. What they did is they took a bill that was tied to veterans' health care funding,
they wiped the bill clean, they left the bill number in there, and they superimposed all the Obama stuff as if it was an amendment to the original veterans bill. That's how they slipped it through. And then the House didn't have committee hearings on the Senate's amendment. They just simply passed it by a voice vote. Nasty, nasty stuff. But that enraged the American people so much that there was once again another revolution that came out of the Republicans.
What did they stand to gain from that?
They could control healthcare. They already control food. They control the schools. They control the media. If they control healthcare, what else you got left? Obama, hugely unpopular. There was a charge. But this was a different Republican Party. This was not the, the George W. Bush moderate Republican Party. This was a new ultra-conservative pseudo-libertarian party that to a degree was not only angry at what the Democrats were doing, but they were also angry about the Republicans' complacency. They wanted to fight. And by the way, this would be the seeds out of which MAGA would grow from. The Republicans, these new Tea Party Republicans, claiming to go back to the original intent, wanted to have a Tea Party, basically throw over the policies of the government and start a revolutionary change within government to basically bring us back to the original intent. Well, the Republicans would gain 64 seats in the House and 6 seats in the Senate. But the Dems managed to hold the Senate by 1 vote majority. On the state level, Republicans once again seized control of the majority of the states, as well as the state legislatures. It was a national ripple. And then Obama got reelected, which was surprising. All polls seemed to hint that Romney was actually going to be able to nudge him out until the media jumped on a couple of comments that Romney made, and they basically buried him with it. FYI, if Romney would have gotten as many votes as John McCain did in 2008, Romney would have won. Because Obama got a significant less amount of votes than he did when he first got elected. So it was one of those races that were close. If a few more votes one way or another, it could have flipped. But he gets back in, and then you know what Obama does not do? See, Bill Clinton learned the lesson from 94. After 94, Clinton went to the center. Clinton started working with the Republicans, focused on shrinking government, trying to weed out corruption, trying to implement a balanced budget. Obama did not. Obama continued far-left policies. He pushed for DACA to give legal status for kids of illegals that were brought here. Hugely unpopular. There also was a foreign policy crisis. The Middle East was lighting up in what was called the Arab Spring, which would give rise to ISIS. There also, Obama made the first Iranian nuclear deal, when literally in the middle of the night, military transports flew into Iranian airport, just barely touched the ground, and unloaded multiple pallets of American dollars in exchange for Iran supposedly allowing UN inspectors to view their military sites. I mean, their nuclear sites, which never happened. People were pissed. The Republican wave in 2014 was not as big as the Tea Party or the Republican Revolution, but the Republicans increased their gain in the House by 13 seats, giving them the largest majority they've had since 1928. And they managed to claim 9 Senate seats, which gave them their first majority in the Senate since 2006. Wait, there we go. Thought I clicked it. They also increased Republican governorships, and they also increased their control over state legislature bodies.
Well, because of the Republican wave in 2014, this is what Donald Trump was able to ride all the way into the White House in 2016. When he was elected, he had control of the House, he had control of the Senate, and one of the biggest accomplishments that he was able to do was to pass the tax cuts that they hopefully make permanent. Because if they don't fix this problem, if the tax cuts that Trump put in were allowed to expire, 87% of our population are going to have their taxes go up. But we also know, if you remember, what the media was doing to Trump when his first term was in. They were trying to skewer him. They're still trying to do it now, but he's so experienced, he's just knocking them left and right. But it was Trump's unpopularity that in 2018 once again saw the pendulum go back the other way. I mean, literally, the pendulum, which used to be slow, which used to go for decades and decades and decades, suddenly, almost every 2-4 years, it's swinging back and forth. The 2018 midterm was the highest turnout for midterm elections since 1914. 49.4% of voters turned out to vote in those midterm elections. By the way, usually presidential election years, it's like 50 to 60% turnout. Congress is usually around like 35%. What happened? Well, Congress was split. The Democrats picked up 41 seats and took control of the House. And the Republicans, they picked up 2 and held a slight majority in the Senate. So you had a divided Congress. But the Democrats seized control at the state level for the first time in several years. And they did not pick up a majority of the state legislatures, but they did pick up 6 new states that they controlled the legislative bodies.
...2020 gets in. Trump, COVID, all the chaos leads to Biden getting into office. And when Biden got in office, they managed to seize control of the Senate. Democrats controlled both chambers for Biden's first 2 years. And then there was a pendulum shift Biden's midterm, where the Republicans once again took control of the House. Biden left as one of the most unpopular presidents in our history, helps Trump get reelected. And what does Trump do? The Republicans ride his coattails, and now, once again, they have control of both chambers. So what's going to happen in 2026? Well, like I told you when we first started, it all depends on what Trump does. If Trump blows it, screws things up really bad, then the pendulum will shift. And the people will throw the Republicans out, and the Democrats will take control of Congress again. Even though Democrats are less popular than, I think, lawyers and used car salesmen. Popularity polls mean nothing if the president is not popular. But if Trump is successful, he could be one of the first incumbent presidents to actually help his party pick up seats in Congress since the 1920s.
You just never know. But again, the bizarre thing is this is one of the reasons why it feels like our country is so divided. Because you have two sides, ideologies, that are basically entrenched, and they are doing everything to kill each other.
But of course, you know, sadly, the one thing they're not doing, they're not doing their jobs. They're not looking out for us, we the people.
Sad. Questions?
Just gotta start doing some popular stuff quick, because the midterms are not looking fantastic from this.
I agree. But I think one of the things, well, you gotta figure he's focusing on all those 80-20 issues. But I think if when he announces the details of the actual first completed trade agreement,
yeah,
that's just going to reverse everything. Because the stock market's basically come back.
Right.
So.
Well, the stock market's been all over the freaking place. It's been up, it's been down.
I know. Well, historically, it's been like that, but nothing quite as jerky.
Yeah. But the whole Michigan gerrymandering thing with the Supreme Court, was it Michigan?
Michigan.
Yeah, that was weird. Yep. That was politically interesting. Yep. That does not bode well necessarily.
Nope.
They're able to redraw those lines.
Nope, you're right. You're right. So, again, it's just you just got to pay attention, see what happens, because you never know. Any other questions or comments? Well, guess what? At the same time, there are congressional elections going on. As I mentioned, there are not only state, but there are local elections as well. And as I said, remember, U.S. has more elections than any other country on earth. Now, FYI, this... Oh, I thought I was going to have a number. Since 2000, it's in your book somewhere. I think they said there's been something like 12 million elections, or maybe it's 13 million political elections. We're talking governors, lieutenant governors, state legislatures, judges, state cabinet members, city councils, mayors, county executives, school boards, district attorneys, sheriffs. Heck, in some counties down south, they even elect the actual dog catcher. We vote, we vote, we vote. But here is the thing. I teach state and local government here. And even in that class dedicated to state and local government, I don't have time to talk about how each state runs their elections. Because every single state has different laws and procedures on how they run their elections. Why? Well, the states control their own elections. And even town by town within states, they have different rules and procedures. We're in the spring season. All of the municipalities, or most of them, are having their municipal elections. Every single town has their elections on different days. They have different times that are involved. Of course, it's all regulated by the state, but they can do that. They don't have to have one municipal election day. Heck, we even have some towns that still have their town elections as part of their town meeting. And that's okay, they can do that. But we'll just say it's complicated. Now, on the municipal level, there is no grand party organization. Local elections are won or lost based on, well, we'll just say the personal reputations of the candidates. You know, if you're going to go and you're going to vote for a member of your select board, or you're going to go in and vote for someone who's on your school, running for school committee, chances are you know them, or you've heard of them, of what they're all about because of their activities in town. Heck, we got one guy running for my board that his whole foundation of his campaign is the fact that he's pushing for a Prop 2.5 override to put more money in the schools. Even though he's only lived in town for 2 years. So here's the thing. In my opinion, I think he's going to struggle at the polls. Because one, who in their right mind is going to vote for a tax increase in this economy? And two, Sutton is a weird town. Well, I'm sure it's like most towns, is that we have a phrase called Suttonians. And the old timers in town only view true Suttonians are people who were born there. Which is kind of funny. So even though I've lived in town, oh, I'm getting on 28 years, and I've been elected to office, I've been in office for 17, 18 years, school committee and on the select board, I'll still go to some of the old timers. Yeah, I like you, but you're not a Suttonian. Thanks. But again, that's just one of the weird, quirky things about our town. Every single community has those weird, quirky things. But what's not important, you don't have massively organized campaigns. You know, you don't have fundraising drives. You don't have Dems versus Republicans. No, it's all on the individual. And what that individual can do to get their vote out. Heck, there was one town in Massachusetts. I think it was North Shore. I could be wrong. But they actually elected a high school senior. And how did he get be a member of the select board? Well, he used to go and speak before the school committee. So that means people had a chance to see him, hear him. And he just did a ground game. He went and did door knocking. Shook hands with people, talked to them, got to know their name, got to know their face, and he was able to win. That's what I did the first time I ran. Actually, I did it when I ran for re-election the second time. Now, at the state level, well, state elections are more partisan. So we are gearing up towards a statewide election in 2026. So if you're listening to the Boston news channels, you keep hearing like Democrat Maura Healey or Republican, I don't know, there's been a couple of names that I've seen that are thinking they're going to run for the Republican governorship. But you hear more partisan stuff. At the state level, you also have party organization. You have fundraising drives and so forth. So the statewide elections are more like the national elections. But national elections could trickle down and impact the races. So what's going to be interesting to see is how are the voters going to deal with Maura Healey if she tries to run for re-election, considering how much money she's given out to the illegal immigrants and putting up in housing. You know, they spent billions and billions and billions of taxpayer dollars. Are the people of Massachusetts going to be okay with that? Even though Trump has called Massachusetts out for being a sanctuary state. Or Massachusetts has tried to block ICE activity. You know, is those national issues going to impact this race? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but it might. Now, will we ever switch to a Republican state? Heck no. We're too far gone. But Massachusetts does every now and then have a tendency to elect a Republican governor, so that might happen. Who knows? And I've already said this. I'm just going to skip this. I'm going to skip that because I've already talked about the issues of 2008. That was, and I've also done 2020, so we don't have to worry about that. Questions on state and local. This is just the biggest thing.
These two right there.
Yes.
Kind of like what you said about like how like Southern has like a weird, not weird, but like interesting.
It's quirky, yeah.
Yeah. I live in Rutland.
Yep. We're taking your town manager.
Really?
Yeah, your town administrator, yeah. We hired him.
There tends to be a lot more elderly people in Rutland from what I've gathered.
Yep.
And our council of aging, from what I've gathered, is pretty much like our town government.
Yeah.
Like, they're very, like, most of our town clerks are also part of the Council on Aging.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, like, the quirky thing I've noticed about our town government. I don't, like, mind or anything. It's just something I noticed, you know?
Well, you know what the truth of the matter is?
Yeah.
Is most people don't have time to get involved in local government. When you're young, you're in college, you get married, you have a family, you're working, because it takes a tremendous amount of time. So what ends up happening is typically you have the older people, the people that have been going to the activities and see the way the town has progressed, and they have a tendency to get involved. It's typically like that in most towns.
Really?
There are some towns that the trend's a little different, and I what I've observed, it has to do with housing. So if you have a town that you built a lot of those new housing complexes and you get a whole new group of people in, the newcomers have a tendency to outnumber the old-timers, and they kind of take control of government. That's what happened in Grafton, right next door to me. So your town probably just hasn't hit that yet, but it may. Plus, the other thing you got to remember is we are an aging population. We are not reproducing at a level that's going to equal replacement. I think it's like 1.8 children per married couple. So what does that mean? Well, our population is going to get older, which means the people who have the time, they're going to have more influence, disproportionate interest. And the old timers are going to vote for them. All right, we're done with that. Any other questions on that? Give you another little chunk of a unit. Well, here's another thing you might see when you go into the voting polls. Ballot questions. Ballot questions. There are no ballot questions that impact national government. We don't have a democracy. We don't have a say other than electing officials to implement the policies that we support. But we can't make law, we can't veto law. But several states allow it in the form of ballot questions. Citizens have the ability to go in the poll and vote yay or nay about proposals for legislation. Those are those little red books that come to your house before every election that detail all the ballot questions. Now, there are three types of ballot questions, and not every state has the same. The most popular ones, pun intended, are called initiatives. These are ballot questions that are submitted by citizens within the state or groups, activist groups. That's how we ended up with recreational marijuana. A bunch of marijuana corporations came in, found some citizens in Massachusetts, got them to draft up a proposal, which they then went out and gathered signatures. And once they got enough signatures, it got put on the ballot, and people in Massachusetts, by a slim majority, voted in favor of it. That was completely driven by the people. Somebody came up with the idea, they drafted the question, they submitted it to the government approved it, and put it on the ballot. The other type of ballot questions are called referendums. Now, if you're the voter and you see either type on the ballot, generally speaking, they look the same. The only difference between an initiative and a referendum is where an initiative comes from citizens, a referendum comes from the legislature. The state legislature wants to put this question before the people. FYI, back in maybe it was 96 or 98, might have been 2000, I don't remember. Citizens in Massachusetts put a question on the ballot for taxpayer-funded elections. They wanted clean elections. They were sick and tired of all of the money, the special interest money. They were sick and tired of all of the that comes with partisan politics. So these citizens drafted up a question and the vote is approved that basically if a candidate promised not to take private campaign donations, that there would be a special fund where the taxpayers would basically pay for their campaign. We had one candidate that did it. He ran for governor, lost. Well, because of seemingly how positive it was, the Massachusetts State Legislature then, 2 or 4 years later, put a referendum on the ballot. And that referendum basically sought to repeal the clean election law, which the people ended up voting for. So it was a weird scenario because there was a trend of trying to clean up elections as this was an idea, but
But at the end of the day, the taxpayers are like, okay, there's not enough money to fix the potholes in the roads. Why are we going to pay for someone to run for office?
So ultimately, it was rejected. Now, FYI, 24 states plus Washington, D.C. allow for initiatives. So it's a minority of states. And by the way, Massachusetts, yes, we have initiatives.
34 states allow for referendums. Massachusetts does as well.
So what does this mean? Again, just another example that we don't have a democracy because not all states allow people to have a say in legislation. Oh, one other kicker.
There is actually no obligation that in Massachusetts, even if the citizens pass an initiative, that Beacon Hill has to enact it.
Beacon Hill has the ability, through procedure, to basically chop it up so much and basically decide it's unworkable. Case in point, back in... I really should write these examples down so I remember. It was like 2000... Was it in the 90s? It might have been in the 90s.
Citizens put on the Massachusetts ballot an initiative to bring back the death penalty for cases of homicide, killing kids, and killing cops. Went to the ballot, passed significantly. Went back to the state house, and it lost by one vote. One Democrat, I think he was from Seekonk, basically decided that he knew better than what the people of the state wanted. So that's just something to keep in mind. Even if you come up with a great idea and you go out and you do all the groundwork, you get the signatures, you submit it, it gets on the ballot, it gets voted on, it still could be tanked. Why? We don't live in a democracy.
Now the third, I gotta get going. The third
type of ballot question is something we do not have in Massachusetts, but I wish we did.
It's recall. Recall allows voters to actually remove elected state officials before their term is up. Now, there are 18 states that allow it. Massachusetts is not one. And all of these states have different procedures. The two recall efforts, attempts to recall the governor in recent years that have been popular. Wisconsin did it recently, as did California. Under Wisconsin law, it takes 25% of voters who voted in the previous election to sign on for a recall vote. Whereas California, it's only 12%. But basically what happens is if it gets the enough signatures, you actually have a special election that has two components to it. The first is the question, do you wish to recall governor or whoever? If the answer is yes, I think all states require a majority, then the second question is, who's going to replace them? So there's also a special election that's tied to it. The only recall that happened in my lifetime that I can think of that was successful occurred in the early 2000s when California recalled their governor. I think his name was Gray Davis. And he was recalled on allegations of corruption. And when he was pulled out, he was replaced by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Became the Gubernator. Massachusetts does not allow it at a state level, but there are some towns that do allow it. It's very few. I don't even know how many, but it's very few. Because it's something in the charter. So you could recall a selectman or a member of the school committee.
We do, but I think it takes 10% of registered voters to start a recall election. So it's really hard to do. Questions on ballot questions. Because then we got to talk about the mother of all elections. Seeing none? All right. Mother of all elections in America are the elections for the president of these United States of America. These elections are frequently referred to as marathons because technically they begin a day or two or three after the previous election. The election process begins informally. Candidates, potential candidates, launch exploratory efforts. So, what do? They try to go out and get on TV. They try to increase their image. Watch what Gavin Newsom is trying to do in California. He has been invited on to many podcasts. He started his own podcast. He appears on TV. He's trying to make himself a household name. Problem is, he's not going to be able to do it because of the policies that he's enacted in California. But you can see him going out and doing it.
Governor Patrick
Davis. Yep. J.B. Pritzker. There's some other Democrats that are there, again, just trying to do the same. So whenever they're, Tim Walz. He's still going out and talking. Again, just trying to keep his name, they're trying to keep their names in the discussion. Kamala actually came out and gave a speech last week at one point. Yeah, that was brutal. But why do they start now? Well, think about it. They need to make a machine. They need to get volunteers. They need to start being able to solicit donations. Because FYI, if you don't have a machine, a campaign, staff, and committee, if you don't have volunteers and you don't have donations, you don't run for president. But what you will see is there will be candidates who begin to formally announce their intentions when we get closer to the midterm elections. So fall 2026. You'll start hearing individuals saying, I'm thinking I'm gonna run for president. Now, by the way, 2019, due to the unpopularity of Trump at that time, saw the largest field of potential candidates in the history of the United States. 29 Democrats announced their intention to run for president. And on the Republican side, Trump actually had 4 people that announced they were willing to run against him in 2020. Now, what a little interesting thing, Trump actually launched his re-election campaign on February 18th, 2017, which was the earliest formalized start of a re-election campaign. All right, so fast forward up to the midterm election. Who can run? And what are the limitations? Well, we covered this. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5, that natural born citizen status. The only people that can run for president are if you are a natural-born citizen. You have to be 35 years of age or older. And of course, you must have resided in the United States for 14 years prior to running. As we know, both president and vice president have the same requirements.
talked about that.
And the only limit, of course, is the 22nd Amendment, and that's the two-term limit. Which, by the way, apparently I saw it on a clip on the news this morning. Trump did an interview over the weekend, and he basically admitted he was gaslighting about running for a third term. But even Trump, he could not overcome that. Which, of course, we talked about that previously. All right. Now, there are stages to the race. The first stage in the presidential election are the primaries. Now, as I said last class, when we talked about primaries are not in the Constitution. They are operated by the state parties. And every single state, as we covered, has slightly different primaries. There are the open primaries, there are the closed primaries, there are the caucuses, there are the jungle primaries, etc., etc., etc. To win, you have to win the marathon. You have to receive enough delegates in the primary. You have to get the most donations. You must get the most airtime. Basically, you need to get so much that all of your competitors, the fellow members of your party, run out of money in support. And it's not easy to do, because in order to win the party's nomination on the Democrat side, Democrat candidates have to win 2,025 delegates out of 4,049. And on the Republican side, they have to get 1,191 out of 2,380. Of course, if you remember the primary, every single state was worth a so money amount of delegates. Some state primaries, it's winner take all, where the winner basically gets all of the delegates. Some have proportional. So like if a candidate A gets 35% of the vote, they'll get 35% of the delegates. But every state is different. If you get enough, though, then you should be able to secure the nomination at the convention. Now, FYI, Democrats, due to what took place in not only the 1968 presidential election, but also the 1972 presidential election, the Democrats created a rule where the party can essentially nullify the votes by the people in the primaries. This is the reason why the Democrats have so many delegates. They have super delegates. The Democrat governors, the Democrat representatives, the Democrat senators, they can throw their vote to whomever they want. And they can basically flip the outcome of primaries. Case in point. In 2008, Hillary Clinton should have been the Democrat candidate for the 2008 election. But all of the superdelegates pledged their support to Obama. So even though Hillary got more votes in the primaries, Obama ended up being the candidate that was nominated in the convention. Because the superdelegates basically flipped the outcome. Why? That's who they wanted. Questions? All right. C. Seeing how this just happened.
Back in 2024, I'm sure you remember. Primary season was long.
Traditionally, it lasted from February all the way to August. But this past year, it actually began in January. So if you were paying attention, I know some of you are probably like seniors in high school, but some of you are older than that. If you were paying attention at all, it just seemed like the election was going on and 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 on. Because it was. Because it was. But the reason why it's so long is because every single state has their primaries on different days. That's all it is. Begins with the Iowa caucuses. Then you have the New Hampshire primary. And then states like Nevada come in and in South Carolina. Of course, some states have tried coalescing. In March, the first Tuesday in March, we have what's called Super Tuesday. And on that one, 14 Democrat states, sorry, the Democrat Party in 14 states and the Republican Party in 13 states have their primaries on that day. Massachusetts is part of Super Tuesday. And typically the last primary is Connecticut. Connecticut typically holds their primary at the beginning of August. Now, throughout the primaries, typically all you hear is about the president. Sometimes, when it looks like a candidate is winning, they will make an announcement and declare their vice president pick to help win up those last few delegates. That's what Biden did when he ran. When he was running, he basically said he was going to pick a woman of color. That was to be an announcement to all of the people who that was a priority for, to help get their votes. And then when some of the last Democrats, like Bernie Sanders, their campaign was running out of steam, he then announced Kamala before going into the convention. Trump this time around did the opposite. Because Trump realized when he ran the first time, that he was running with Mike Pence, that he actually lost some votes. So Trump kept it secret all the way up until the convention. And that's when he announced that he had chosen J.D. Vance to run with him. Now here's the funky thing. Had Trump been assassinated at Butler, Pennsylvania, the Republican Party would have been up a creek because there was no announced candidate. I don't know what they would have done. Someone would have just had to be chosen at the convention. It might have been Nikki Haley. Who knows? Because she had the second most amount of delegates. But if it was the opposite and it was when Biden ran and something would have happened to Biden and he would have died, then because the vice president was already named, they could have gone on to get the nomination. All right. Now, the only exception to this process are the third parties. Third parties do not appear, Third parties are actually unable to have primaries in every single state. Because most third parties are local parties. They're not really national parties. And they struggle to get support because all of the states have certain rules on which candidates and which parties can appear on the ballots. Essentially, the rules block out the potential for the rise of a third party. And plus, third parties are in a catch-22. You can't get support without money. But if you have no money, you also have no credibility. And if you have no credibility, how can you get support? You know, I read something this morning that there's an effort in Massachusetts to try to start another third party. The last party was the Independent People's Party or something like that. So in Massachusetts, in order to get on the ballot, you need to get like signatures by 5% of the voters in the previous election. That's just to get your candidate to appear on a ballot. And if they don't secure 5% of the vote, then the party is not allowed to run candidates in the next year. So the rules are really stacked against third parties in Massachusetts. All right, crap, I gotta do this quick. National conventions. I won't talk about these. I'll just slowly click through it. If you're using the outlines, you know what's coming. The primary task of the conventions are the nominations of the presidents and the vice president. You know, if recall, they're typically 3 or 4 nights. And every single night, you know, the major players in each party get on stage and they give speeches. Generally speaking, the party that lost the previous election goes first. So the Republicans had their convention before the Democrats this past year. The delegates at the convention are the ones who vote for the official party platform. All of the things that they claim the party represents, but the candidates don't have to follow what the party platform is. Candidates are free to run however they wish, on whatever issues they wish. And of course, third parties also hold their conventions, but they're small. They're nothing like the national conventions. Heck, I think this past time around, I think the Libertarian Party held their convention on Zoom. All right. And then lastly, once you get past the national conventions, then you have the general elections. And again, focused on the line under the plural. Technically speaking, we don't have a presidential election. We actually have 50 separate presidential elections that happen on the same day. Because as I said multiple times, it's the states who run their elections. Now, by the way, prior to establishing Election Day on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, states actually used to have their presidential election days on different days. But Congress basically wanted to make sure to make it easy so that way we would know who won the president. So for instance, the second presidential election, granted George Washington did get all of the electoral votes. He's the only president to be elected unanimous twice. But New York's electoral vote was not determined until 1 week before Congress was supposed to vote on him, because they held their presidential election like the middle of December. Which they, at the time, they were allowed to do.
Sorry. Are there other presidents that have been elected unanimously once?
No.
So he's the only one that's done it at all?
He's only done it at all, yeah. The closest was James Monroe when he ran for his second term. And he should have gotten unanimous because there was no one running against him. That was like the era of the good feeling. The Federalist Party was dead. But there was one voter, one elector, I think he was in New Hampshire, that basically decided the only person worthy of being unanimously supported was George Washington. So he intentionally voted for John Quincy Adams, even though John Quincy Adams was not a declared candidate.
Did George Washington set tariffs?
Oh, yeah.
And did that lead to the recession?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Was there another president that imposed tariffs?
We've used tariffs throughout the history of our country. We've always had tariffs. Well, what happened after World War II, though, is that Truman, in order to rebuild the war, Truman in the Democrat Congress basically lowered tariffs, and on many of our allies gave them no tariff status. And the tariffs were not put back in place until Trump started doing it.
Okay.
So they were technically on the books, but they were sent for like 0% or like 0.1% or something piddly.
Wasn't that kind of like before we joined the war?
What?
In World War II.
We had very high tariffs during the Great Depression. But after the war, we lowered the tariffs. And essentially, that's been the point that Trump has been making. Agree or disagree, it's factually true. The United States has not gone back and raised our tariffs, even though every single one of our allies have had tariffs on us.
It's kind of the war that got us out of the Great Depression.
Well, yeah, because the government put us into so far debt through deficit spending, but basically allowed people to go to work, they get paychecks. And, yeah, absolutely. All right, other questions? Let's see if I can finish this up, and we'll deal with the Electoral College when we come back. All right. Now, the general elections are different than primary elections because you now have two candidates from different parties running against one another. So, one of the weird things is ideologically speaking, during the primaries, the party candidates in the primaries tend to go to the extreme positions of their voters. So Democrat candidates go far to the left, and Republican candidates have a tendency to go far to the right. And then the winners that go into the general election then suddenly tend to go back to the center. Typically, that's what has happened. Because in order for a Republican to win, they need some Democrat votes. And in order for a Democrat to win, they need some Republican votes. So however you identify politically, and I hope you don't, hopefully you identify yourself as an independent, but we all have those issues that we're passionate on, and most of us, our positions are not that far off to one another, a little bit one way or the other. But there are extremists. There are radicals. So if the candidate speaks to the radicals only, they're going to lose the majority of the people and they cannot win. But there's also more attention. National coverage. There's events. There's media spots. There's advertisements. They go on, give speak. Trump did the rallies. Heck, I think it was like 1 or 2 days that he had like 4 rallies in the same day. I went to one. I went to one of them up in New Hampshire. I was exhausted by the time Trump was done at that rally. He just goes and goes. He's like the Energizer Bunny. But notice what's Bernie Sanders doing now. Trying to do the same thing that Trump did. He's trying to go out and have rallies. So, you know, we could see a shift. But again, it's still part of this campaign process. With the rise of television... Ah, crap. All right, hold on, I'll do this. I'm just going to run this up. There we go. Those are the last two things. With the rise of television, there have been debates. The first debate was Nixon versus Kennedy. Very interesting, the story with that debate. It wasn't required. But they were both intellectuals, and they decided to see if they could get together, act like gentlemen, act like diplomats, and they, you know, had a really, really in-depth debate over policy issues. The funny thing is about that debate is if you watch the debate on black and white TV, Kennedy was the winner. Kennedy did something that no politician ever did. He actually hired a Hollywood consultant to help him pick his suit. He chose a polyester suit, light, breathable, because of the hot lights that are in the studio set, 1960. Kennedy also had a makeup artist that put makeup on his face that did not run with sweat.
That was one of, I think he had a condition, I can't remember what it is, but it makes people bronzer.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons he was set there too.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas Nixon, he was sick at the time. He wore a wool suit, so he looked like he was half dead.
So the weird thing is people who heard the debate on the radio claim that Nixon won, but the people who watched it claim that Kennedy won.
And by the way, same thing on the big debate between Trump and Biden. Although if you watched it or you listened to it,
yeah, you could have fixed that one. And of course, last but not least, the media plays a huge role. If you watch left-wing media, then Republican and the Nazis. If you watch right-wing media, then the Democrats or communists. All right, we're going to come back. We got to finish up elections.
I got to talk about the Electoral College. And then we'll talk about parties. All right. See you on Wednesday.
There has to be people whose whole job it is working with these politicians and putting their image out there.
Oh, huge. There's huge advertising consultants that are out there.
I think it was 2 Super Bowls ago when RFK reran the 60s Kennedy ad. I was like, brilliant.
That
Love
was
it.
Absolutely. They said the same thing. Yep.
But yeah, there are people that get paid thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to help.